Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 16th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Daniel Victorio.
And as much as we had a non-eventful week last week, in the wake of the 4th of July here in the U.S., this week had all of the news. We've got dates for some stuff. A game was delayed because a game that I think got pushed up last week or a couple weeks ago took the spot it wanted. Let's see. We got a date for PlayStation's accessibility controller. We got a new EA game in the Marvel Universe. We got some good news out of Sega. Mainstays at Xbox and Naughty Dog are leaving their companies. We got some news about, a lawsuit at Niantic that's starting, a lawsuit at Bungie that's ended in good news, and some big developments in the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard. That signals it. That's likely to end pretty soon. So we got that. We got a new study from the Video Game History Foundation that is pretty interesting, as well as a couple showcases that may not have a ton of stuff we'll talk about, but has some wild stuff in there, especially the Limited Run Games showcase, where they said, fuck it, we're going for it on some things here. But yeah, let's see here. We'll start with what we've been playing. I'll kick it off here. I played a couple of the most recent Game Pass titles, did some streams for them. There's Exoprimal, the new Capcom multiplayer-only game that is on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. $60, but it's on Game Pass as well for that. And yeah, it's an interesting game. But it's very much them making a weird future sci-fi Overwatch, essentially. Where in this future, there are these weird like time portals that are happening that are spawning these dinosaurs that, as you're doing matches, often are the most common of the objectives you get in them. Where it just drops down a bunch of raptors usually, but sometimes some other monsters, some of the other dinosaurs that they'll just be like, oh, you got to kill 50 of these and 10 of these and maybe a Carnosaur or a Tyrannosaur or whatever other ones they have that are some neat dinosaurs to have. A lot of your very kind of core types, your flying type, your raptor, your big T-Rex type, and your Tyrannosaurus, not Tyrannosaurus Rex, the Triceratops, which I've been mostly playing as Roadblock, which is, if you know your Overwatch, it's your tank with a big giant shield that your teammates can shoot through. And it has a really cool thing where the Triceratops charges at you, and that shield's designed specifically to stop it and take a bunch of damage. You'll see a counter on the shield for how much damage it can take, and so you're not encouraged to have it up 100% of the time. Obviously, you have some abilities for that to do like a nice big attack, like slam attack with it, though that knocks you out of the shield. So you got to make sure you know when you need to use it for that kind of stuff. But yeah, the weird thing, so it goes through a tutorial, teach you the controls and some of the basic gist of how it works with AI teammates in your very first match. But after that, you only have the one match type. Maybe they unlock more as you level up. I'm like level 5, I think. So not that far into the game, but that was a few hours of playing for that. And yeah, it's that's all it is this match type that's you can specify whether you want it to be PvP, where you're working through these tiers of challenges. And once you get to the end, you're sort of getting ready to take on the enemy team in some sort of competition, whether it's direct fighting or, doing some more, one last challenge to compete against them so you can do it first, that kind of stuff. They also have a PvE option, which I think you're just competing to do, these objectives and get them done. I did random every time, and it didn't seem like I couldn't tell if any of the things I did were PvE, because I think it was all competitive against another team. But they don't explain that kind of stuff super well there. But in the Overwatch kind of fashion, I've gotten a couple of what they call war chests, which are their loot boxes. In very much like Overwatch, you get 3 items out of them. Yeah. And very much like in Overwatch, you have, I think you have 3 of each of the main types of characters: support, tank, and DPS. There might be one additional one with like one character in it. There's one locked on each of them, which requires you to play a ton of the game. I think the yeah. easiest one to unlock requires you to get to account level 20. There's others that are like 30 and 40, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, the progression on this game is very slow. They have a battle pass already at launch, $10 to get the paid tier. If you're on the free tier, for like 50 levels, you only get like 6 or 7 items out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all kind of emblems and decals and banners, which, if you know your Overwatch, are very kind of inconsequential cosmetic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can just have like a little background for your name tag and an emblem for is your avatar, your in-game avatar. And decals are sort of little stickers you can put on your robot suit, which is not really saying much. It's like the roadblock has like 3 spots on there. Mm-hmm. I only have 1 sticker, so I put the same sticker on each spot.
Mm.
It doesn't really add anything to it, because you're not really looking at the front of your character that much. Very much like in Overwatch, you have, I don't think any custom weapons, any sort of like weapon changes, but you have skins for it, skins for your suit. And what else is there? There are, I think those are the main ones there. Those are generally tied to either paid DLC. They got like a $40 pack of all the individual cosmetic packs they have out now and are going to have for the next couple of months here that you can pay for if you want. And what else? The paid tier on the Battle Pass has actual weapon skins and suit skins and that kind of stuff. So, mm-hmm. It's a game that seems very much built around you just playing it incessantly and hoping to enjoy it a lot. And I feel like that's a type of game that is kind of out of fashion a little bit, mm-hmm. at least for paid, for a $60 game where they're selling $40 of DLC, cosmetics, and a $10 battle pass to it that is not all that thrilling for me. But as you play, you kind of get an individual level for your character that you're using, your suit. And that gets you some extra stuff. It's I think my roadblock is like level 5 as well. So that's like 2 of the unlocks were just coins, BIC coins, BIKCOINS. That's used for unlocking or upgrading stuff like that. But I got 2 mods for my character. One, there are like 2 types. There's like a base mod and there's a suit mod. Mm-hmm. Suit mods are specific to each of the suits. Base mods you can equip on every character.
Mm.
And by the time I got my first mod, which was a base mod, I had enough of the coins to just upgrade it fully to level 5. And I forget what that did. I think it gives you extra movement speed when your health is down below a certain point. And I think it changes the threshold depending on the character. It might just be based on the level. I don't know. I got one suit mod for a roadblock that's, I think, increased armor for something.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have enough to upgrade that fully, but like every match I play, I get enough to generally upgrade another level on that. So I basically have nothing else to spend the coins on right now, mm-hmm. other than just, you know, playing with each of the characters and upgrading theirs. I think it goes up to 20 mm-hmm. for each of the suits. And yeah, it's kind of just that. Along the way, the other thing that you unlock, I guess, that is just kind of weird is cutscenes. Because mm-hmm. They're still trying to tell a story. As sort of initially, you're just a person picked for this team, and you have your team that you meet. And there's like the leader and the sassy girl and the nerdy guy that's missing an arm, but he's attracted to the sassy girl.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a robot, AI robot, on your team, and that's kind of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the general premise is that this other AI that's been on this island and is sort of like teleporting in these monsters, these dinosaurs and other people in, are doing it in, they're sending you to, I think, 3 years prior. It's like mm-hmm. 2043 and sending you back to 2040 before this island went to hell.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think you're going to there the day that the AI wakes up and starts generating these, or teleporting these dinosaurs into the island,
mm-hmm.
kind of stuff, to essentially do infinite war games, as they call these matches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, if you survive and you win, you get to survive another day. And if you die, you know, that's it. Your run's over and your crew is going to die, which is like, that's weird. Because obviously, as a game, that never happens.
Mm-hmm.
You just lose and you're just like, oh, well, I'll maybe do another match, or that'll be it for the day, kind of stuff. So yeah, it's Overwatch. They're charging a lot of money for this.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have Game Pass, you get past that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like there's $110 worth of stuff to buy, and I'm getting increasingly feeling like if you're charging $60 or $70 for your game, your Battle Pass should be free.
Yeah.
Charging for that on top of the paid price is kind of the thing where it's like, this is a bit much. Expecting, you know, this is a multiplayer only game, so your only existence in this game is either just purely enjoying it or unlocking stuff to, you know, change up your characters and whatnot. And making people pay for that kind of just feels cheap. Like, this should have been a free-to-play game, I think, at this point. I don't know if it's going to do that well, but that's just kind of the vibes playing it for a few hours is like, this seems like a free-to-play game based on how bare-bones it is to start. And, it's an okay game. I might play a little bit more of it, but I'm not, like, super thrilled by anything that's going on here.
Mm.
So I want to play Overwatch. I'll just play Overwatch 2.
Yeah.
Because that's the game that's doing that, and I may not even want to do that, because that's, I've played enough Overwatch. And I didn't even get to the ranked matchmaking in the original Overwatch. I kind of just ran out of it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's Exoprimal. You can check that out on Game Pass or PlayStation or PC. The other game I played for Game Pass is Commonhood. This was an interesting-looking game that came out this past week. That is an indie game, a survival kind of community-based survival game, where essentially you are maybe being like a base builder of sorts. It has an interesting premise where it's set in this area where your character, whose father used to work at the big factory in this town, he has passed away in a big accident, like a sinkhole accident at this factory. That seems like it's devastated this town's economy and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so these people have lost their homes, become homeless and sort of taken shelter in this factory that's been abandoned for, you know, some time. I think she's tried to make it work as long as she could, but ultimately couldn't keep up with payments and all that and lost the home, managed to grab as much as she could, and ended up coming to this factory to build a new life and, like, kind of find answers for what happened here kind of stuff. So you kind of come to this factory and, you know, kind of do a lot of your early survival game stuff of, you know, talking to people that give you quests to do and that teaches you how to do certain things, that kind of stuff. You know, here's a workbench. This is how you do stuff at the workbench. You need power for that. So, you know, you have a power generator that you keep fueled up, and you got to pick up, you know, the scraps that are all over the place and kind of clean up, tidy up, that kind of stuff. And you get a shovel to deal with the dirt mounds that are around as well. But then you start running into some dirt mounds that require like a pickaxe, and it's like, okay, that'll be a later game thing kind of stuff. But you kind of go around and, you know, pry into all the boxes and grab all the materials and such out of there. And you start, as you're doing quests, you kind of manage to get like one person that's part of your community, your crew. And with that, you can kind of assign them to do tasks throughout the day. So you kind of have an itinerary of sorts to work with for these people. The days don't last too long. It's like maybe like 15, 20 minutes at most to go through a whole day. And it's generally like 8 to 9, 8 a.m. to like 9 p.m. Doing stuff. But you have to kind of improve your relationship with these people to assign them things to do past certain points. So like right now I can do 9 to 1 o'clock. And I have three people. One of them's good at farming, so I set them to do farming stuff. Another person's good at building, so any building stuff, I set them to do that. And the other person is a good like researcher, and so you can have them go through the research tree stuff, which is a pile of books that you got from your dad that you set up, and you just pick something on the skill tree. As they sit there, they'll wind down the time it takes to go through certain points. And, you know, skill tree stuff and this kind of thing would mean, you know, you're doing a lot of researching to open up new like types of crafting benches, that kind of stuff, to make more things that let you make things that need that you can need to make, you know, machines and new furniture and all this stuff to do all that. So it's got that kind of tiered kind of thing to it, where you're just kind of working through upgrading to different benches that let you make more stuff to make other benches to make other stuff. You know, a lot of like what you have in, you know, your fort, your Minecrafts and that kind of stuff. We have basic crafting benches and smelters and all this kind of stuff. I think you get through that, but I've only played like 5 hours so far. But yeah, there's a weird thing playing on Xbox. The big issue I had with the crafting stuff is, so the way that is shown to you on the UI is you have on the left side, you have, you know, items you can make, and it'll show like X's on stuff that you can't, that you need to do research to make to that point. And the left side's like, or the right side's all your materials. And when you hover over your materials, it'll show you the name, like what it is, maybe what it's good for, where you might be able to make it, that kind of stuff, what sort of, you know, machines you need to make that stuff. That's pretty useful. But on the left side, it doesn't do any of those pop-ups. So you're looking at icons, you know, images for these things, and you're like, what the hell is this thing? There's been a couple of times where I've seen like, okay, this looks like some new like machine that I can use to make something. And I go and craft it, and it's a, you know, crafting bench I already have. And I'm like, well, that would have been nice to know. So like at the end of the streams I did, I went and started up afterwards I started the PC version, because for whatever reason it wasn't running well enough to let me stream it on PC, so I just did Xbox. I start up the PC version, and boom, it has the pop-ups on the left side for the things I can make. So I can know what I'm making without having to guess what it could be. Because sometimes you'll just have lists, you know, text of what you need. And it's like, well, I don't know what that looks like as an icon kind of stuff. And it's a lot of UI stuff like that, that it's very rough around the edges. So it gives off vibes that it's an unfinished game, like it's in early access and all that. On Xbox, it is not listed as like a game preview thing. On Steam, it was in early access until last, I think, November. Then it released into 1.0. And even this is like a version, it's like a couple of major updates past that, and it still feels pretty bad on a lot of that UI front. On the Xbox, you know, you can easily tell that it's a PC interface where it has a lot of buttons all over the place, but that would be easy to access with a mouse to point at and click on. With a controller, you're hitting the D-pad or the moving the sticks around a bunch, hoping that it goes where you want it to go, and get frustrated when it does for one split second and then warps your cursor around to somewhere else on the screen, that kind of stuff. That makes it really frustrating to do things because it doesn't just have shortcuts to switch to like your action bar at the bottom of the screen, or switch between, you know, your left side of your UI or your right side, or swap to the have a button shortcuts to, you know, sort your listings so you can find stuff more easily. There's a lot of things I had issues with where I would have materials just show up in my inventory for some reason that I was pretty sure I put into the communal storage that, you know, your people that you have doing itinerary stuff. You can put like wood and dirt and other materials in there so that they can, you know, keep up on doing things without you having to manage all that stuff. And I would just have like wood just constantly show up in my action bar for some reason. I wasn't sure how it was doing that. And I would have, you know, stuff I set up for my builder guy to build, and it would just show like needs items. And I go look into my inventory and I see like, oh, I don't have it here. I look in the communal one and it's like, oh, there's enough to make it, but it just does not want to make it. It's like a lot of weird bug stuff like that. I never had any crashes or anything, performance issues a couple of times, but nothing like it crashing or anything. But it just has some weird things where the building interface is weird. So like building a chair, you kind of just have to hold your wood and it just kind of shows a starting point and you're just dragging a cursor across to sort of fill up this bar where you would have like a piece of wood at, that kind of stuff. You're kind of doing it for every chunk of the build, which isn't too bad for a chair, but then you start getting to more elaborate stuff like tables. And at the first big thing you do with your people is building a bridge to get across the sinkhole to the rest of the factory. And so putting that bridge together was pretty annoying because I had the two railings that you needed, but the big plank of wood that goes between them, for whatever reason, just would not work in letting my builder make it. I'd have all the materials. It just freaks out whenever I would set it to be made by the builder. And so, yeah, when you do that and you cancel, you have to sort of redo the blueprint stuff. It's a lot of clunky stuff there on that stuff, which, you know, if everything else worked pretty well, I would forgive it on some of this stuff, but everything just works so clunkily that I just kind of got frustrated by the end and felt like it was a game with a lot of potential to be a very cool game, even if it was, you know, a bit clunky at times. But
yeah,
the general unfinished nature of it just kind of ruined a lot of it, where it's just a game with a lot of potential if the devs were, you know, going to do updates and keep up on it. But from what I could tell, the devs have not put out an update on the Steam version since March. And the version number of that update, as far as I could tell, I wasn't going to buy it to find out for myself because I don't think they list anywhere on a Steam page like what the latest version was, but it was like 1.0.3 was something like the version number on Steam, and the one on Xbox was like 1.0.6. And I was like, is this a version number weird thing? Is it just differing between these platforms? And I couldn't tell. And I looked at like the Steam forums, and it was full of people being annoyed that something that had a lot of promise and to it was just, the devs were kind of just felt like they had abandoned the game. There's no communication from them. A lot of bad Steam reviews. A lot of good ones, as people saw like the cool parts of the game, but the rest of it kind of just undermines that stuff. So, and the Xbox version now is getting, you know, a lot of those same kind of reviews of people saying it's unfinished and all this. So, yeah. And the weird thing is going to the PC version, a lot of the prompts showed up as the Xbox controller prompts. I was using mouse and keyboard on a PC. So it would show up, you know, press, you know, left trigger, right trigger, A, B. And I'm like, I'm using a mouse and keyboard. Why are these prompts showing up? And sometimes when I tried to click on them, they would go back to the mouse and keyboard controls. And the fun thing is that the inventory prompt or the tutorial prompts that you get, you know, as you're playing it on Xbox are all in the Xbox buttons, you know, show that for everything it's referencing. On the PC version, it also shows the Xbox button prompts. It doesn't show you any keyboard prompts. And so it wasn't until I played on PC that I found out I could crouch, which I don't know if that's even a thing in the console version. I tried buttons to see if I could crouch, and I don't think I ever found anything on that. So that was like surprising. It's like people in some of the reviews or the Steam forums, I forget, were trying to post like, here's what I found, you know, what does what, because there's no remapping of, you know, controls on PC. There's not even a way to get, you know, a listing of the controls. So it's all through those tutorial messages, and it's like, this is such a weird product. And it's weird that Microsoft said this was a good thing to put on Game Pass. I mean, it's good that you don't have to pay for it, but, you know, the iffy performance, the bad controls, the bad UI don't really help out the other cool parts of it, because it's, you know, it's a survival kind of communal base building thing with no no threats to it, no combat as far as I could see. There is talk of like, oh, maybe the cops will come and break things up here, but I didn't see anything like that in the 20, 30 days I played in this. So I was still like, oh, there's pretty good vibes here, because it's, you know, just everybody working together to make this place better, and you can, you know, talk to people. There's like one person that's kind of a jerk, but you just need to do a quest for her, I guess, to make soup, but I couldn't figure out how to get, you know, the food machine being made. I couldn't figure out which crafting bench was the one to make that, and how I got to that because of the poor UI and all that kind of stuff. And even trying to Google for information, seeing if there's like a wiki out there that can explain the way you get to this stuff. And no, there's a Steam guide that's like, here's a starter guide kind of thing. But even that only goes up to the point that you make the bridge to get across the sinkhole. And so it's like, okay, this is a game that seems to not be popular enough for people to make guides or anything, really. And it's not popular enough for there to be a wiki, and it's not popular enough for the devs to keep working on it and make it a better game that's deserving of that kind of stuff from the community. Because from what I saw, a lot of people wanted to do that kind of stuff, but there were no updates to suggest the devs wanted to, you know, reward them for it. So that's kind of the very disappointing thing about that game. So, yeah, it might be one of the worst Game Pass games I've seen in a while, which is disappointing, because it's a game of very cool premise and cool vibes to it that is let down by most everything else about it, which I can handle some jank. Like, Minecraft was janky for a while, still is kind of to a degree, and a lot of these kind of survival games are like that. But if you're doing cool stuff and, you know, updating it to fix issues, you know, people can get over that. But this one's not getting those updates, and so it's suffering for it. And it's disappointing because it's got some cool stuff about it that I would like to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There's that. And another game that I would say has just been kind of a bummer, Diablo 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a game that I wanted to like a lot, but it is just busy work, the game. It's not a huge surprise out of a Diablo, but I think this one just kind of has a big open world that's very much an MMO in a way that just kind of makes everything not feel all that interesting that you're doing. So you're just kind of going around and doing, you know, just killing enemies. And you're like, oh, I got a side quest that's over here. I guess I'll go do that. Kill some enemies and then, you know, finish it and then go warp over to where you turn in your stuff and then you get your XP. And it's just like nothing about the story has been all that interesting. At least the side quest stuff, the things between like the big moments of the campaign, but the campaign is just weird. I'm still in Act 1, even though I'm level 32. Like, 50 is the max for the first part of the game. Like, 100 is the ultimate part of the max, but I think you have to get to a higher world tier to get that.
Yeah.
So, that's weird. I've been having, you know, bugs and server disconnects at the worst times. I did a stronghold, which is sort of one of their big events you can do, which were like the dungeons are just a series of fights that you're doing in this sort of enclosed area. Although the dungeons are, I think, completely closed off, but the strongholds are sort of these big areas where they have a bunch of big fights that you're kind of working your way through. But much like in the dungeons, I die a lot and, you know, respawn and try and figure out how to go. With me sort of using a guide to set up how my character should be properly skilled out with all the skill points, it's made it a lot easier, which I think just takes out a lot of the personality of it. Cause the fun thing about Diablo 3 was kind of just going through. And like, once you get your loot that has like health regeneration to it, and extra XP and that kind of stuff, you're kind of less worried about getting out specific builds and more about just picking up cool attacks that work with the way that you want to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that with this initially, and then I hit a point where it seems like my build was no longer valid with the campaign stuff. So that was annoying, and now that I'm doing that, I'm like, okay, I leveled up. Well, I'll pull up the image of the guide that shows me what I need to put that point into so that I'm not, you know, behind on the meta kind of stuff, you know, which takes out kind of the fun of the game. Of, you know, experimenting with all that, because if you want to respec all of your skill points, it costs some money. It's not that much. It's like, at the point I'm at, it's like 2,000 or 3,000 gold, which is what I get out of most of the side quests usually, so it's not that big of a deal, but it is annoying because it's a big old skill tree that's, you know, isn't very fun to look at. Because it's, you only have like a certain section of the screen that you can look at it, and it's not, you know, you don't even get the fun of the Path of Exile skill tree, which is a literal giant tree of little spots you can fill in with skill points.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even get a great sense of the scale of everything.
Yeah.
On that, so it's just like, all right, I've found the guide that tells me the best way to play my class, and I'm just going through and doing quests and such. I went through that stronghold, got to the final boss. I died a couple times, and the one good run I had where I was down to like a third of health for the boss, the server just disconnected, and I had to start over again. And that was late enough where I was just like, fuck this game, and just quit for the day. Came back the next day or two and worked out pretty well. I had a, you know, pretty good guide. I went and took a look at all my equipment and, you know, upgraded stuff and whatnot, and it made it a little bit better. Didn't make it like the everything levels up with you, so there's no real easy quests or anything that if you've been carrying it for a while. So if you pick up a quest at level 10, if you do it at level 30, it'll be a level 30 quest kind of stuff. You may get stuff that's like a level or two higher than you, but even that can, you know, end up being at that by the time you do it. So yeah, it's just kind of a game I'm like, it's fine, but it's not what the hype was making it out to be. Even being frustrated with that server disconnect, I almost was like, you know what, I'm going to pull up Battle.net and I'm going to start up, I'm going to download Diablo Immortal. That's where I was like, I'll get a game that's reliable there. That kind of thing. Yeah, and I had an issue earlier today where I was doing a dungeon and took one of the little tower things to give you like extra abilities. It was just like, you're a ball of lightning and you just zip around the place. Well, I zipped into a wall and got stuck. Couldn't like dash out of it. I tried to use the teleport back to town thing, and when it put me back, it put me right back in the wall. I was like, this is fucking stupid bug to have. That I can't like find any way to like reset me or anything. So that caused me to give up for a good bit on the game. And it's like, see, look, that's my experience with this game. It's just running into something very frustrating and giving up on it for a while. And maybe coming back for it. Cause they, with the new season starting this week, they very much want you to finish the game. And I'm like, I'm trying to, this game doesn't want me to. Especially now that like a lot of my side quests are just like, go do this dungeon and then you'll have an extra quest inside the dungeon thing to do besides the main thing in the dungeon kind of stuff. And like, I've been doing dungeons and like, oh, there's an event. I didn't know it was an event, but it's an extra thing that happened while I was doing something. And so, yeah, it's a, there's a lot of things like that. It's just not an interesting game really. It's just more of the same, more of what Diablo Immortal was, just a bit more polished. But yeah, it's an okay game. I'll probably play some more, but I don't know if I'm going to get the campaign beaten before the season starts. And the battle pass they have there starts, which I don't know that I'm going to pay for it anyway. So yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon? What have you been doing?
Well, I recently started playing Octopath Traveler 2. I wanted to play it back when it originally came out, but, you know, money and other stuff got in the way. But I finally was able to download it for my Switch, and yeah, pretty enjoying it so far. If you've played the first Octopath Traveler, it plays more or less the same way. You start off, you know, being able to choose a bunch of characters that you want to start off with. I ended up starting with Agni as a dancer because I started off with Primrose when I played Octopath Traveler, and their origin stories are basically night and day because Primrose is extremely dark, like right off the bat, whereas Agnia's is extremely light and cheerful. But yeah, the very quickly as you start, you know, you start ganning up other members for the party, and they all have their individual stories to tell. I managed to get Oswald, who's a scholar, who had to like escape from like this isolated prison that's like far to the north and where it's constantly snowing and icy and all that stuff. Yeah, it's like I haven't really gotten too far into it because I've only been playing it for the last couple nights, but it's definitely a lot of fun and difficult because Octopath Traveler, the battles in that game are famously like not something you can go in and out of very quickly. They all require a certain degree of strategy and of thinking ahead. And, you know, fortunately, when you're starting out, it's very easy to like go up a level or two with basically every fight you encounter. But, you know, you always want to make sure that you're loaded up on like, you know, health and, you know, spirit power ups that you can use, because you will run out of both very quickly if you're not careful. But yeah, so that game is a lot of fun. They definitely have upped the production value in some cases, especially the animation. The animation, character animations are definitely a lot more detailed than they were in the first game. There's a lot more sprites used. And unlike with the first game, the characters in the party do actually interact with each other more often. But yeah, it's a lot of fun, and you know, playing it right now. And on top of that, I'm also still playing Street Fighter VI, still going through the world tour, and yeah, that whole mode, I just absolutely love it, and I love just how unbelievably silly it can be, and I love all the little references and Easter eggs that are shoved into the game, like seeing all these old Final Fight characters that I haven't seen in such a long time actually coming back and being a thing in the story is kind of crazy. I had no idea that, you know, they would bring back Carlos Miyamoto from Final Fight 2. I thought that character was done and gone and was never going to come back, and yet there he is. But yeah, I just really enjoyed that, and it's just a lot of fun. So yeah, that's basically what I've been playing. Danrib, what about you?
I haven't really had much time to play anything, primarily because I've had my flooring changed, and yeah, that takes up a lot of time, and because it takes up a lot of time, it also means all my stuff is disconnected. So aside from my Switch, which I did play a little this week, there hasn't been like anything that normally would get my time. Like typically I would spend some time playing FF16, but that hasn't been the case. Anyway, going back to the Switch, I started the Pikmin 4 demo, and yeah, it's really a lot of fun, but like it's also like the first, you know, hour or so of the game, and it's really text heavy. And you know, especially if you're someone who's played Pikmin before, it's not really much stuff you need to know. But the main cool thing is, yeah, you have access to the dog now, and you actually get the dog before you actually get Pikmin, and the dog can do things like break some pots that are in the way to, you know, open up new areas, or the dog can also like help pick things up, and he's essentially as strong as 3 Pikmin. And yeah, eventually, like you find yourself finding other members of the space crew as they look for Captain Olimar, because they're using a whole bunch of other people. And yeah, so I started the adventure. I have some red Pikmin now. Did some map exploring, and I also found some ice Pikmin, which I believe are new. I don't remember them being in Pikmin 3. And the main thing is, yeah, they can set things on ice, or they can work as platforms in the water, but I haven't ran into any scenarios where I had to do that yet. There's also a scenario similar to Pikmin 2 where you can go to sub-levels, and those sub-levels can be 100% based on what you do. Normally they have a ship part or maybe another crew member there that you can go ahead and pick up. So those are pretty cool. And when you're in the sub-levels, they don't take up as much time as when you're in the actual level itself. You still have the day-night system where, you know, you want to get as much done as possible before it becomes nighttime, or else, you know, it gets too aggro and stuff. And I've been enjoying what I'm playing, and like so far this demo will stop after you get like 1500 of their currency, and apparently you can go ahead and connect that to Pikmin Bloom, which I don't play, but aside from that, this stuff carries over to the real game, and that comes out I think the end of this week. So I'm not going to be able to play it day one, but from what I've played so far, it's been really impressive, and I'm looking forward to it. And then aside from differences, again, like there's the dog. I think on day two or three, you have the dog be rideable. So not only can your space character ride a dog, but you can have the Pikmin ride on it too. And no, it's a really cool experience, and it really adds a lot to the game. So again, really having a lot of fun with that one. And then on Thursday, I attended an event in San Francisco hosted by Team 17. They were featuring a whole bunch of games that are coming out over the next few months. So I got to try out Classified France 44, which is a turn-based strategy game similar to XCOM. I played some Gord, which is a real-time strategy game, very similar to like that of like not necessarily Diablo, but more I guess. StarCraft as far as crafting, and then I played some Moving Out too. So starting off with Classified France 44, again, it's very similar to XCOM, and what I played was a build on PC, and it was mostly tutorial stuff. You're basically just like using a couple of guys in the middle of a strategic war, and you know, you want to make sure that you're aligned in the right place in order to shoot some people. And unlike most strategy games, in this sort of war genre. You can also actually scare people with bullets. So even though, like, for example, before you attack an enemy, it'll show like your odds of hitting it and how much health you'll take down, right? But even if it shows zero, you're actually encouraged to shoot anyway, because that'll like affect their morale. And, you know, when their morale is bad, they all of a sudden wouldn't want to fight, like, you know, whether they'll be shell-shocked and stand there, you know, just take any shot, things like that. And, you know, when you're scared and you're at war, it's not really the best combination there, because you're probably going to get killed anyway. So yeah, that was an interesting one. That one is still an alpha. We don't have a release date yet, but it'll come out sometime this year. The other game I played was Gord. And with this game, it's sort of a fantasy. It takes place in a fantasy setting. And basically what we had to do was just pretty much build a base. You know, you can do things like build an armory, build a church, and whatever it may be. And then as soon as you go ahead and build your base, you can go ahead and explore the outer world. And in the outer world, you'll find like other characters to recruit and things like that. But of course, you have this fog of war system that you want to be able to explore through. And if your characters are alone and or weak and they run into other enemies and get killed, like, you know, that's pretty much going to ruin you there. And, you know, it'll really affect your community. And then your community can also do things like give birth to like other units you can use and things like that. So it's a pretty interesting game. This isn't my wheelhouse as far as like games go, but I'm pretty sure it'll be definitely one to look out for when it comes out next month. Another game I played was Moving Out 2. This is the sequel to the party strategy game that came out in 2020, where all you have to do is try to move a whole bunch of stuff in a house into a truck. And like, this game gets pretty crazy. It's very similar to Overcooked in the sense where like everything is happening at the same time and you really want to just choose which things are more important to do. In this game, you can go ahead and throw things out of windows, throw things in the truck. Like, it doesn't matter how clean of a job you do. As long as you do the job quickly, that's the main thing they're going to look at. And of course, you know, you have some items that can only be or some items that are more easily moved with two people. There's also a whole bunch of gizmos and gadgets that'll make you that'll one, they'll power you up, or like two, they'll just throw you on certain other parts of the map. The cool thing with this game is that there's a whole bunch of different kinds of settings, or not settings, but different places you can go through the levels. Like, there's one that's futuristic, so they take place like in space or the sky. There's one that's takes place in sort of like a Candyland ice cream kind of place where it's all just, you know, sweet and colorful. And yeah, it was a really colorful, fun game. This was the first playable build they have in the United States, and this one's going to come out next month at two, I believe. So this is a game that's pretty fun, and I want to try to beat the first one before I play part two. But this is definitely a fun party game to look out for. And yeah, I'll have written previews for all three games sometime over the next couple of days. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, so yeah, let's get to some news here. And first up, it is a new month, so let's check out some new PlayStation Plus game catalog titles.
Yep.
Here for July, starting on, I think it'll be the 18th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the first one here for PS5 and PS4 is It Takes Two. So that's cool. That'll be outside of the EA Play, I think, is the subscription service they have. So people that do not have that can check out that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it'll also work with the Friends Pass thing, so you don't have to have your buddy be on PlayStation Plus to check it out with you for that. So that's still cool there. Let's see. Next up here, PS5 and PS4, Sniper Elite 5, the latest game in that series of, you know, ridiculous sniper action of shooting Nazis in the nuts and the head and whatever fun spots to see their insides explode.
Mm-hmm.
I played this one when it was on Xbox Game Pass, and I don't know, the early stuff just did not do anything for me.
Yeah, it's not an easy game. It requires a lot of thought.
Yeah, and then the first level does not seem to have as much of, you know, distance shots to shoot Nazis in fun places.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot more close-up stuff, which is not what I come to Sniper Elite for. Or, yeah, like, it's called Sniper Elite, not Close Range Elite. So, yeah, there you go for that.
Mm-hmm.
PS5 and PS4 SnowRunner. This is the second game in the series of driving trucks in extreme environments, hauling cargo through, you know, big muddy areas that are hard for vehicles to get through. This one has more snowy areas in it as you're driving your trucks and all that kind of stuff to get over tricky terrain and all that kind of fun stuff. It's a very fun game.
Mm-hmm.
Or I played Mud Runner, so that's the one that was a lot of fun to play.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff, so that's cool. Also for PS5 and PS4, World War Z. They just put out like a special edition of this game. They added a bunch of content to it earlier this year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
As well as, you know, have it out for the PS5 and Xbox Series X and S. So that's a cool one of those, you know, co-op games against hordes of enemies kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also for PS5 and PS4 is The Ascent. This is a fun little kind of dual stick action RPG kind of game set in a very bleak cyberpunk world.
Mm-hmm.
I played this also on Game Pass, which was pretty good. I don't know that the action felt super great. But might have just been some of the early game stuff there. So maybe this will feel better coming back to it. For PS4, Undertale, the cult favorites, wacky, weird RPG that kind of plays a lot with the boundaries of you know, what you expect in feedback from your actions in a game.
Yep.
Playing around with a lot of that stuff and all your expectations you expect out of like an RPG like this.
Oh, so yeah.
That's one that's definitely worth checking out.
Mm-hmm.
Here also for PS4, SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom Rehydrated. This is a remaster of a PS2 SpongeBob SquarePants game. That's like the one that people like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So you can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Also for PS4, Melty Blood Type Lumina.
Yeah, here we go. Melty Blood.
It's one of those fighting games that's been around for a good amount of time since probably the PS2 era. That was like one of those games that people talked about a lot that wasn't a big, you know, fighting game.
Yeah, it was very much like a cult hit.
Yeah. But now it has actually gotten some releases on consoles, and this one's the most recent one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. If you like your underground fighting games, mm-hmm. this is one of those for you. I think it has rollback. I think this is one of those ones that has rollback in it.
Yeah.
Let's see. For PS5 and PS4, Dismantle. It's Dismantle with a Y instead of an I in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the more recent Turn 10 game, or not Turn 10s, 10 Tons games. The people that did Crimson Land and Jidge and a bunch of games like that, like top-down dual-stick shooter kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of them kind of spreading their wings out a bit. This is like a survival game.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might still be top-down-ish or maybe isometric style. But this one, I've seen a lot of good word about this one. So if you're into that genre, this might be one to check out. Definitely not Commonhood in that sense. Let's see. Also for PS4, Circus Electrique. This is the game that came out a couple years ago from Zen Studios. Kind of their follow-up to, I forget what it's called, the other RPG they did that was sort of a first-person dungeon-crawling RPG. But this one, I think, is more of a maybe Darkest Dungeon-style RPG.
Mm-hmm.
The battle system very much looks like that. But, yeah, the action set in, like, a steampunk circus kind of world to it. Mm-hmm. So you get a lot of fun stuff with that. So yeah, this is a game I've been kind of eyeing to check out. So now I'll be able to do that here on PlayStation Plus. Let's see. Also for PS4, Dynasty Warriors 9, the latest one of those games. So probably does a lot of cool stuff there. A lot of time you can spend in those games. So there you go for that. Also for PS4, Samurai Warriors 5. If you like Dynasty Warriors but want it in Japan, there you go for that. It takes place during the Sengoku period, where obviously one person killed thousands of people, often in battles. Let's see. Next up here, they got some kid stuff for PS5 and PS4. My Little Pony, a maritime bay adventure. Mara's in like M-A-R-E. I guess it's a place in the My Little Pony universe. So there you go for that. Let's see. For PS5 and PS4, Fast and Furious Spy Racers Rise of a Shifter. And that's Shifter in Elite Speak. So replace the I with a 1 and the E with a 3. So yeah, that's like an arcade racer game. I guess you could probably throw this in with the kids stuff as well. For PS4, Monster Jam Steel Titans. Kids like monster trucks.
Yeah.
Even though there haven't been very many of those that are any good. But this one features a lot of licensed one. You know, Gravedigger and his many variants. And I guess one called Max D, which anybody over a certain age would be snickering at that name. So there you go for that. That's it for the stuff that's just on Extra. Or for Extra and Premium, for the premium-only stuff here for the classics. For the PSP, there's Gravity Crash Portable. This is a really cool game that's taking influence from a lot of arcade games. I'm trying to think of which ones that is. A lot of arcade games like the Vector Graphics, Gravatar, Thrust, stuff like that, that it's very much inspired by. Really cool art style, but this is the PSP version that has a bunch of... I think it's pretty much a PSP version of the PS3 game, so remember that still being pretty good for that. And the other two games are coinciding with the release of the Twisted Metal series. The PS1 versions of Twisted Metal 1 and 2 are going to be added for some classic car combat action for the series that, you know, defined the entire genre. There, especially Twisted Metal 2 is kind of the pinnacle of the genre for most people there. So, the series starts on July 27th on Peacock. So you can watch that and then go play the games for something that's more satisfying, I assume. But that all should have trophies. I think all three of those games should. So that'll be good there. So there you go for PlayStation Plus. Some pretty good stuff there for the month. So... yeah. Let's see. For our next story here, I don't think this was part of the showcase. I think they just announced it the same day. During the ID at Xbox showcase, they also had the announcement of a demo fest. So it was a bunch of demos that are on Xbox right now in the, I think I have a special section just for that stuff. It's available from July 11th, which was last Monday, I think, Tuesday, to the 17th here. That'd be this Monday. You'll be able to grab them. So, yeah, definitely worth checking out. They mention a couple of games here that have demos. There's Alchemist the Potion Monger, first-person simulation game where you're gathering materials to make potions. And use them or sell them maybe. So
yeah,
there you go for that. There's Elisa, which is a horror themed action adventure game, throwback to, I guess, like Resident Evil and that kind of stuff from the 90s. There's Dynacat, a fast paced 3D isometric action platformer. So there you can check that one out. There's Knights of Braveland, a cooperative beat 'em up action game. with a generated story.
Yeah.
So, okay, there's that. And Marble It Up Ultra, I mentioned that last week, that has a date. So they have a demo out for that, so you can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
There's Metal Mind. Fuses transforming mecha and roguelike gameplay elements and combines game mechanics, such as weight, armor pieces, heat, and power for you to forge a unique weapon of war to fuel your killing spree. So that's cool. There's Night of the Rabbit. Join Jerry and follow a peculiar white rabbit to the wondrous realm of Mousewood.
Mm.
That sounds like a very Wonderland-style area. So that's cool. And they have a list of some other stuff you can check out as well. From there, Sea of Stars is on there. WrestleQuest. A few others here. So yeah, a bunch of demos to check out. So mm-hmm. there you go on that front.
All right.
Next up here.
Dang, we only have one more day left.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started last week, so. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, the Dragon Quest Treasures game that came out on the Switch, I think, earlier this year, is coming to another platform, PC. I think this is one of those games that has not really done super well, or I haven't seen a ton of people talking about it mm-hmm. being any good for that, but now you'll be able to get it on Steam for $49.99.
Yeah,
For that, so that'll probably go on sale more readily than the Switch version.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there you go. New place to come out, so that must be what the Nintendo exclusivity allows for a PC version, but no other consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, I probably am. I think the game came out in December on the Switch last year. I don't remember, but like, I don't know. It's tough to want to play a Dragon Quest themed game based on, or a treasure hunting game based on Dragon Quest. I don't know. To each their own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Next up here, I think this will be up Brandon's alley. Sting is releasing a Switch version of Yggdrasil Union, We'll Never Fight Alone.
Finally.
On July 27th for... Mm. $25 alongside the PC version coming out of Early Access.
Yeah.
This is one of their, I forget what the trilogy of games they called.
Oh, the Department Heaven series.
Yeah. This is one of those games that started on the GBA, got ports to the PSP and DS, I think. Mm-hmm. Now finally has a release on something new that people have.
Yeah, and, not, something you can actually play, with a regular game. Like a regular game instead of, a port on PC.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
One of their, weird brand of RPG stuff.
Yeah.
So there you go on that. Next up here, Stray Gods, the role-playing musical. Was supposed to be coming out August 3rd. But unfortunately, Baldur's Gate 3 decided that they were going to release there.
Mm.
And so the devs for that game said, well, we'll delay our game to August 10th and sort of take the extra week to polish up the game a little bit further for launch. So, which is good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Be looking forward to checking that game out.
Yeah.
So, there you go. A little bit of a delay there, but nothing too bad.
Mm-hmm.
Next up here, the next game from Don't Nod, Banishers, Ghosts of New Eden, finally has a release date for November 7th.
Mm-hmm.
That's on, I think, the PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S and PC, so that'll be one to check out. It's an action RPG with guns and such, so that looks pretty neat there for them to kind of push more into some of their action-oriented game stuff that they've done over the years. So there you go for that. And the last date I have here is the PlayStation's Access controller for the PS5 will launch globally on December 6th. Mm. It'll be $89, $89.99 US.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good price for that. I think the Xbox One is $100, $120, something like that. that is pretty expensive, and from what I've seen people say, this one has a bit more usability to it out of the gate before you even hook up other added control stuff to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, they'll be doing pre-orders starting July 21st for that, for people to get their pre-orders in and get it by the end of the year. It seems like they've got a lot of cool stuff with this. There's a lot of pieces in there to customize the big ring of buttons, and as well as where you put the stick on there, and how you want all this stuff to work in the OS. They got a lot of OS stuff there that looks pretty cool. So yeah, that's great to see for that. And then, yeah, let's get to the rest of the announcements here. EA made a big splash this week by announcing that they are working on a Black Panther game. And particularly, they have a new studio in Seattle that is working on it called Cliffhanger Games that they have just established. So that's cool. It's led by Kevin Stevens, formerly of Monolith Productions, who made the Shadow of Mordor games, as well as a bunch of veteran talent that's worked on God of War, Halo Infinite, Call of Duty, among a bunch of other stuff. Mm. And they're still kind of doing a lot of hiring, so people can apply for that to work on it. But yeah, this seems like it's still pretty early in development, so don't expect this until maybe a few years from now for that. But this is kind of the second of the Black Panther games, I think. Because there's the one from Skydance that's like a World War II game featuring Captain America and the Black Panther of that era.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting game that Amy Hennig is working on.
Mm-hmm.
With Skydance, so that's a neat thing. But yeah, more cool stuff coming out. So there you go for that. And let's get to some good industry news. Sega of America, we talked about their employees were going to be holding a union vote here in the near future. And we got the results back from that, and they have overwhelmingly voted to unionize.
Mm-hmm.
91 votes in favor, 26 against it. I believe they had some votes that were thrown out that were contested. So this, I don't think technically is a majority of the studio, but nevertheless, it still will be forming a union called Aegis CWA, AEGIS, the Allied Employees Guild Improving Sega. In partnership with the Communication Workers of America, we'll be finally unionizing and kind of getting some better wages and conditions to work in there. So that's great news for them. Yeah, and then they have a letter from Sega here saying, today we received tentative results of the NLRB union election, saying 139 of the 212 voters participated in the election. Majority of employees who participated in the election voted yes for unionization with the CWA. Official outcome of the election is not yet certified by the NLRB. Any party may file objections to the election within 7 days of the vote count. But yeah, this seems like they're saying like, yeah, we'll respect the wishes of the people that voted here. So while still saying like, we believe that a direct relationship promotes a supportive environment, responsiveness, and shared commitment. We respect our employees' rights and maintain our legal commitment to the NLRB process. So still getting their weasel language in there, but they don't have anything else they can do. So yeah, there you go for that. For some big names leaving their places of work, Major Nelson has announced that he is leaving Xbox after about 22 years at the company as a big marketing figurehead for the company. Have been running MajorNelson.com for the longest time as like a way to get the word out on a number of its games, with a podcast and all that kind of stuff going for a while. So yeah, that's definitely a big deal for them. As he says here, after 20 incredible years, I decided to take a step back and work on the next chapter of my career. As I take a moment and think about all we have done together, I want to thank the millions of gamers around the world who have included me as part of their lives. Also, thanks to Xbox team members for trusting me to have a direct dialogue with the customers. The future is bright for Xbox, and as a gamer, I'm excited to see the evolution. So yeah, that's cool. I guess the Xbox official podcast will be taking a hiatus for the summer. And we'll turn into new formats with the people that are taking over. So yeah, there you go. No more Major Nelson at Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
For that.
Lost, but at the same time, he, you know, well known throughout the industry as an overall good guy. Larry Erb is also somebody who's been very inviting to, you know, feedback players ever since he came in as Major Nelson. So yeah, he's someone that I've had the pleasure. Gotta be happy for him. I don't know what's next, or maybe he actually is retiring, but yeah, cool to see.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. And the next up is Naughty Dog's co-president Evan Wells has announced that he is going to be retiring from the studio at the end of 2023, which he has been there since, I think, 95, since they started working on Crash Bandicoot,
mm-hmm.
Which is not when Naughty Dog started, in case you're wondering. They started in the 80s, like 84, so they're about to hit their 40th year as a company. They started as Jam Software, making a bunch of PC games.
Yeah. They originally tried to do educational software starting out, and that ended up basically failing because they found out that you basically have to get like a bunch of like professors and stuff to sign on it before you can actually put it on the market and all this stuff. So they decided to do regular games. When they started out, they basically shit out some real clunkers. It actually took them a while before they like managed to put out Crash Bandicoot. Crash Bandicoot was like their fifth or sixth game that they released before they finally hit on anything. Because before that, they put up stuff like Rings of Power and Way of the Warrior, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's a hot take. I wouldn't even call Crash Bandicoot a good game. So, you know, like Brandon said, they had a lot of clunkers. Crash Bandicoot was sort of like their claim to fame, you know, compared to a lot of 3D platforms out there. Like, I don't know, it still wasn't it, but at the same time, it had that mascot status. So yeah, there's that. But yeah, Naughty Dog was just one of the examples. Did enough to stay alive, and you know, eventually here they are now.
Like one of their big things before they started working with Universal and Sony was a game called Way of the Warrior, which is a pretty blatant, you know, Mortal Kombat clone, which I think they did a lot of their principal like photography for that in their apartment.
Yeah, they did. I remember like reading on their website about that like a long time ago. Like they did that in their apartment, and they would like taking people pictures in front of green screens of, you know, people in doing, you know, in ninja costumes, and people are walking down the hallway going like, what in the hell is going on there? And they couldn't tell them because, you know, they were developing a game and there was like legal shit.
Yeah. That's a game that they did all the stereotypes they could there. And it's turned out to be a very terrible game. But that got their attention with Mark Cerny at Universal Studios, the game publisher, and signed them up for a deal there that included them working on Crash Bandicoots that put them on the big time, made some cool games there, and then, you know, started working on Jak and Daxter. After Sony kind of did the weird trade of giving Universal the Crash Bandicoot and Spyro the Dragon licenses in exchange for getting Naughty Dog and Insomniac out of their Universal deals and potentially being owned by Universal there. So Sony ended up buying Naughty Dog while they were making Jak and Daxter, and Insomniac took like 15 years later for that. But yeah, Evan Wells was a big part of their legacy. Mm-hmm. Was a game a gameplay programmer for a lot of it. Yeah, he worked on Toe Jam and Earl and Panic on Funkotron as a lead tester and level designer. Was a programmer and lead designer on the Gex games, the first two Gex games. Then went over to Crash Bandicoot as a lead designer for the third game and Crash Team Racing and Jak and Daxter and all that, and worked on everything since then. Has been co-president since 2005 for that. So, yeah, had a great career, one that maybe isn't as big of a name as he should be, but the titles he worked on shows a lot of his skills as a developer and a leader of the team. So, yeah, that'll be sad to see him go, but he's been there for 25 years, pretty much all of his adult life. And so he gets to take a break, maybe figure out what he wants to do next. But yeah, the Naughty Dog will be fine. Co-president Neil Druckmann will become co-head of the studio alongside Wells until his departure, as well as head of creative. Allison Morey will become studio manager and head of operations. Arne Meyer will become head of culture and communications. Christian Gerling will become head of technology. Eric Pangilinan and Jeremy Yates will become co-heads of the art departments. Anthony Newman will move into a new role as head of production and design. So they're moving people up into new roles as heads of their various departments. So there you go for that. Lots of cool stuff there. So best of luck to those two. And now let's get to some bad developers, or bad stuff that's been going on. Niantic, fresh off of laying off at least 200 people in the wake of just some general bad decisions of the past few years. They are now getting sued, as a former Niantic employee filed a lawsuit against the company on Friday. They are going by an anonymous Jane Doe name, but is described in the complaint as an Asian female. Started work at Niantic in February 2020, right before the pandemic started, with a salary of $70,000, the complaint says. Later that year, she was promoted and received a raise to about $84,000, but in approximately 2021, she learned that Niantic was paying a male colleague more money, even though she had a higher job title and more responsibilities than he did, sort of alleging this sort of boys club atmosphere as far as pay is concerned. 2022, she was allegedly paid $127,000. He was paid $127,000 per year, but she was paid $105,000 despite being one job level higher. In around spring 2023, she received a raise to $115,000 per year, still below her male colleague. Around that time, the employee also saw that Niantic posted the pay range for a job title and level. As of 2023, California employers are required, with more than 15 staffers, have to share pay ranges and job listings because of a pay transparency law, and saw that she was being paid more than $10,000 less than the bottom end of that range. With, at that point, being there for about 3 years, that's not great to be below the bottom end of the range for the job title you currently have at that company. She discussed her concerns with other female staffers, and sexism and equal pay were brought up in the company's employee resources group for women. Mm. When the employee brought her concerns to Niantic's diversity, equity, and inclusion director and principal people partner, they made clear that they and male upper management at Niantic were hostile to her complaints or voiced concerns about sexism or sexual bias in the workplace, the complaint says. So that's great. Mm. Especially when you're our company has a principal people partner, which I assume means HR person. Mm. I think that's the translation there. The executives in the meeting also allegedly said her job evaluations were affected by her discussing workplace issues with her colleagues, said that she was paid below the range because she had raised concerns with her colleagues. And she immediately subscribed from the group for women employees of the company and feared that her association with the group would disadvantage the other employees in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's more here, but yeah, she was also part of that, those layoffs. So very much seems coincidental that she got laid off amidst all these complaints, that probably made her an easy target for them, which they obviously won't admit to. But yeah, it's an interesting lawsuit that seems to not paint a great picture of the atmosphere at Niantic if you are a woman. So yeah, we'll have to see how that goes for this lawsuit, but it definitely isn't looking great for this kind of stuff at game companies.
Mm-hmm.
That has got kind of old over the last handful of years. Mm-hmm. I've seen companies still doing this stuff. So, yeah, there you go on that front. That's some disappointing news. But on some good lawsuit news, Destiny, the Destiny developer Bungie has had a lawsuit finish up. Against a player that had repeated harassment and doxing of one of the Bungie community managers. Has been found liable for nearly $500,000 in damages and fees. In a lovely example of fucking around and finding out. According to the official Washington State court order shared on Twitter by a paralegal, this person named Jesse went on a doxing and harassment campaign of a Bungie community manager not long after that community manager highlighted the work of a Black Destiny 2 creator. The court documents state that they, living in West Virginia, added a new number to an anonymous texting and calling service before leaving a hideous, bigoted voicemail on what appears to be the Bungie employee's personal phone. Repeatedly asked that the employee convince Bungie to create options in its game in which only persons of color would be killed. They also started leaving similarly aggressive and racist voicemails for the Bungie employee's wife, as they write here pretty well. But since men with fragile egos and too much time to spend on the internet know no bounds, they didn't stop there. He escalated his harassment campaign by showing the Bungie employee that he knew where they lived. He ordered a virtually inedible odoriferous pizza from Domino's, set it to cash on delivery, and put in the notes that the delivery driver knock at least five times because the person receiving delivery would be wearing headphones. And bragged about his behavior in a Steam group called Terror Gang. And it just, yeah, it goes on to more fun stuff there. The company sent out executive protection within an hour of the pizza attack and hired investigators and outside counsel to try and identify this piece of shit. So everything Bungie did to protect its employee was expensive, and now Comer has to pay the price according to this court order. Not just an important case for Bungie, but also sets a precedent for the industry that, you know, if your company is willing to go to this length to identify, you know, harassers like this, that they can seek damages from them for their behavior. That they be responsible for the actions that they have taken here. Unfortunately, this person I don't think is doing, you know, getting any sort of legal, criminal kind of consequences here. But this is at least, you know, plenty of money. They'll tell them that they should not be doing this shit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good to see. Always good to see people getting legally fucked here in the country.
Yeah. I mean, like, this kind of toxicity is just, you know, unacceptable. I'm a community manager myself. I deal with a community for a microtransaction game. And, like, you know, these are people that spend direct money to our salaries. But at the same time, it doesn't give people the permission to act like an ass. The Bungie community, you know, is normally, like, a really positive one. And I'm sure is obviously going to be the baddest, right? And, you know, this doesn't really do much for people who think that the developers don't care. Like, if you continue to act this way, you know, why should anybody care about you? You know, from the community manager perspective, like, they don't make enough money to really deal with people through this kind of, like, level. And, you know, props to Bungie and, you know, PlayStation if they got involved with, you know, getting this lawsuit done in order to take care of their employees. So, yeah, like, you know, just don't be an asshole. There's no reason to. There was an example, I think, a couple weeks ago during Anime Expo, where people went into NIS America's booth because they had complaints about the translation to Trails into, and I'm like, these people all work in marketing. They have nothing to do with it. So yeah, it's just sad seeing like what lengths the community will go through in order to just one, make their voice heard, but at the same time, like just show just absolute weird elitism that they don't deserve in different place.
Yeah. And Bungie's been always been one of the most open companies to communicate with their fans. But oftentimes they've been getting a lot of toxicity in the past few years. They've just decided like, well, you guys don't deserve to, you know, have this sort of open dialogue with us. So we're just going to keep, you know, limiting what we're going to talk about and how often we're going to talk about it. With, you know, future updates with Destiny and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, these shitheads have only made things worse for these people, for the developers, and everybody else has to suffer as a result. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. But in some big news, the Activision, or the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard has taken some big steps here in the past week. They have survived the legal challenges from the FTC seeking some injunctions and whatnot to pause the acquisition for a bit, which has created a lot of weird animosity with the Xbox community, thinking that the FTC is overstepping their bounds and all this kind of stuff. And Lena Khan needs to be fired and all this. And it's like, this is literally the job of the FTC is to look at these acquisitions and scrutinize them as much as they can, to the degree they can, especially because previous administrations have been very lax on some of that stuff with the tech industry and all that. And so this is them, you know, pushing it as far as they can to find out if this is something that should continue or not. And they did not get enough evidence to suggest that it shouldn't. So that is sort of how things work right now. So yeah, that looks like that is going to happen. The last step really is they're working on some sort of deal with the UK's CMA to get past the issues that caused them to block the deal a few months ago. That whole thing is going on. The CMA has been very receptive to the idea of working out whatever last issues they have with them. And then this morning, the big thing happened where the Microsoft trying to make these 10-year deals about ensuring that Call of Duty will be on, you know, the Switch and PlayStation and these different streaming platforms. They have finally gotten Sony to sign on to this deal, as was announced earlier this morning. So that seems to be largely the end of it. The people that have rooted for this acquisition will get what they want. The largest acquisition in the gaming industry's history will likely be finishing up here in the next few weeks, I assume. Mm-hmm. At least the hurdles before they close it. So that'll be a whole thing. Yeah. So, yeah. There you go. That's likely probably to finish by the end of the summer, I assume. Mm-hmm. Here, maybe sooner. I don't know. But it seems like the amount of hurdles that are left are largely done.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. That'll be happening. And then you'll be able to do get your stuff on Game Pass. Whatever that's worth, really. So,
yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see. That's and the last one here before we get to some showcase stuff. The Video Game History Foundation put out a study citing that 87% of classic video games released in the U.S. are critically endangered. To be specific, this is a study done on they did it with a partnership with the Software Preservation Network.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the state of production of games in this country, in the U.S. here, particularly because, you know, they do not make NES games anymore, or Super Nintendo, yep. or you know Nintendo 64 or GameCube or Wii U games. You know, mm-hmm. That stuff has to rely on either you going through the process of acquiring the hardware to play mm-hmm. these games that are kind of getting increasingly more expensive to buy on the secondary markets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eBay and GameStop and you know, local places and all that kind of stuff. And it's sort of a study kind of suggesting that, hey, we should encourage the industry and the ESA to stop sort of fighting against, you know, libraries being able to have their own archives of games and archivists and researchers and that kind of stuff for people to have access to these games. You know, for the foreseeable future, as well as for people studying games and all this kind of stuff, that the industry that has used these copyright laws that are outdated to a degree for these kind of things, to keep that stuff from happening. Because, yeah, you can go to your local libraries and such and find easy ways to access a lot of movies and TV shows and such. Games go by kind of very hit and miss kind of thing. Some libraries are great, some are not. Some don't have them at all still. But yeah, your ability to play some of this stuff is just hindered by your financial and, you know, time commitment to search for, you know, functioning machines and game cartridges and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, you can, you know, grab, you know, lots of ROMs and such off of, you know, archive.org and other places like that on the internet. But that's not necessarily accessible as well.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause then you have to figure out all the emulation stuff. And then there's a lot of legality with that
mm-hmm.
for a lot of these games that, you know, are not commercially viable anymore due to, you know, companies going out of business and there being nobody to pay to make Goonies 2 available for sale mm-hmm. in places. But you do see companies, you know, re-releasing games in collections and such, but that's still
yeah.
you know, a fraction of the games that they
yeah.
they have available to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this whole situation is like shockingly similar to like a lot of early Hollywood. Like it's believed that a good like 80% of all of the early Hollywood films up to the golden age of Hollywood have been lost simply because, you know, the film reels weren't kept in good condition, or they were just disposed of improperly. Or, I mean, there was famously that fire at that vault that ended up destroying like a bunch of classic films. I think it was in the 1930s.
Yeah,
it's very similar, and it's mostly because, much like with early film, early video games were very much seen as a disposable form of low entertainment.
Yeah, and sort of the access people have to that stuff is definitely better than movies, because I don't think you could really buy movies until like the VHS stuff.
You legitimately could not buy films for like personal enjoyment until the 1980s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and not to mention the fact that back then, those early VHSs, they cost a lot.
Yeah. Which is where, you know, your Blockbuster and all that kind of came into a big market there.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, hey, these things are expensive and not everybody can afford them. What if we charge, you know, a couple of bucks for a weekend? You could rent this and then bring it back. And if we do that every weekend, that's, we can make back the money that it costs to buy these tapes and then some.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. And games definitely had that for a long time as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, those things got more expensive and digital became a bigger thing. Mm-hmm. And then the companies that rented this stuff out, you know, charged more and just ran themselves out of business because they, you know, Blockbuster didn't really handle the digital transition very well. I think they had options to work with Netflix to partner on that stuff, and they said, no thanks, who would want to watch movies online?
Mm-hmm.
And then Blockbuster is no longer a thing. So yeah, the games industry is in a weird place where you can emulate a lot of its history, but they're talking about sort of physical access to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that, you know, you don't see a ton of in other industries. You know, you can get Titanic. They release that on every format that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
From the VHS of the original, which was like a two VHS set.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can get that on 4K, UHD, Blu-ray pretty easily. They release those movies all the time.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, you'll be able to find a DVD copy of most movies out there. Mm-hmm. Obviously not everything, because there's potentially a lot of issues with like licensing and all that kind of stuff, but you know, it's still accessible in some means, but even they're trying to fuck that up with the studios where they're mm-hmm. taking stuff off their streaming platforms that was only available streaming, and it's like, well, how do you get a physical version of this that, you know, you guys can't take away kind of thing? And people starting to realize like, the movie studios are basically advocating for piracy.
Mm-hmm.
And the gaming sphere is getting to that way as well, where you just might as well go to these ROM sites or archive.org and just download those big bundles of ROMs for, you know, Atari 2600 and the NES and all this, and just have that as a backup. If you want to pay for games themselves, you can do that, but you know, most of those companies aren't dealing with those games anymore. They've moved on, and the production for that stuff has not evolved as well as people would like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's some companies out there doing some stuff with that here and there, like limited run games.
Mm-hmm.
Reprinting some games on their original cartridges or porting those games to newer mediums. But yeah, companies release so many games, it's financially and physically impossible to keep porting those to new platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And even on like PC, that's not easy because the new versions of Windows and whatnot don't always support the old stuff so easily without a lot of community support to figure out ways to make it work. So yeah, it's an important topic. A thing that should allow for more archival stuff for preservationist sake.
Mm-hmm.
And not even just in like a backwards compatibility kind of sake. It's just more general. This stuff should be accessible and archived in a proper way to ensure that it survives into the future.
Mm.
Yeah. I think the majority of us on staff are people that, you know, prefer physical over digital. So yeah, like it just goes to show that, you know, there are still people out there that care about preservation through these means. And you know, again, I'm not trying to jump in the rabbit hole, physical or digital. This is not what this is about. This is about making sure that our medium or every entry in our medium is accessible through some way. You know, say what you want about emulation and its legalities. I mean, this is one way that games are preserved. And you know, it's like Brandon said, like these games or, you know, video games were meant to be a disposable medium. And, you know, it's not surprising that this is a problem at all. I mean, it's also a problem with film. And, you know, in the 1930s, you know, there weren't any hard drives or anything like that, you know, get the movies digitally. So yeah, unfortunately, a lot of movies were the film strips just decaying, or, you know, the fires happening, as he mentioned. And yeah, like at the same time, it's like the average person probably wouldn't find it all that important. But, you know, the fact that these museums exist in order to preserve this content is, you know, a very telling piece. I mean, like looking at the site for the Video Game History Foundation itself, just, you know, with the blink of an eye, I can tell you that organization isn't very to begin with. And I wonder how much funding they can get from anybody. Because I don't think they're getting a whole lot of it from AAAs, especially since AAAs are trying to just, like, you know, focus on what's new. And as far as the old stuff, like, make it available through some unnecessary means just to sell it again. And it's weird because, you know, games are, we can talk about this for hours. are licensed properties. You know, there's music that are licensed to the actual artists, and, you know, people are dead, and there's a lot of contracts regarding that. But yeah, at the end of the day, you would hope an organization such as the Video Game History Foundation, at least from now on, is getting like every game from every publisher that comes out from now on. So I don't know. It's tough to see how these organizations are ran, but I just hope that they continue to get the help they need.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a concern that a lot of people want to be taken seriously by the industry, but obviously being an industry run by capitalism, that is not always going to be a concern for most companies, unless they can make money off of it. And so, yeah, that's kind of the big issue there. So, yeah, we'll move on to our last section of the show, which is the ID at Xbox and limited run games showcase. Not everything here is really worth talking about, but we'll talk about some of it. So I'll work our way through this. The ID at Xbox showcase was like an hour long, something like that. Fairly lengthy, though. The recap post that Microsoft posted on their news site doesn't have a link to it. I think it's technically hosted by IGN, so you have to go there and deal with that to watch it. But they give a decent little rundown of things that they showed off here. There's Monolith, Requiem of the Ancients was announced. This is coming to everything PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC next year. But looks like a pretty cool game from the publisher Versus Evil. It's a kind of an action adventure game of sorts. Has like a 3D kind of look to it. Looks really neat. Kind of a striking style there. So that one looks pretty neat. Not much in the way of Game Pass stuff in these games, as far as I could tell. I was watching it, like trying to note when they said Game Pass on there, and not really a ton. So it wasn't that much of a big focus. They showed us some Everspace 2 and saying it'll be on Game Pass when it's the 1.0 version launches August 15th. That's also coming to PS5 as well. I think those are on Xbox One and PS4 right now. It was on Game Pass for its early access part of it. But I guess at some point that ended, and then they came out of early access, and then now they're going back onto Game Pass, so you'll be able to check it out here pretty soon next month. They showed off some Sea of Stars, which has been on every showcase at some point. That's still coming out August 29th. They have a demo out now on Xbox as part of that demo fest, so you can check that out. There's Solace State. That's a weird looking cyberpunk visual novel about this summer. Like, this is one that they had a bumper for it saying it was out, you know, that day, but then it said the summer, and I was like very confused.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, because it's the bumpers are situated as such as they're before the trailer they're supposed to apply to, and every other one seemed to be right, and this one was like, I was like, wait, I thought this said summer, and then, yep. So there's Worldless. That's a neat looking game that has a demo in the demo fest that'll be out this fall. I think that's just Xbox and PC. There's Myth Force. We got a date for that. That'll be out September 12th. That's that Saturday morning cartoon looking game. It's been in early access on PC for a while. But that's coming to everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC in September. So you'll be able to check that out. Another one that was notable is Scarlet Deer Inn. This is a game that I have seen on Twitter that was one of those games that's notable because the entire art style is done through, or at least the character animations are done through embroidery, as they embroider these characters and their various animation frames to do that, and then scan it into their computer to do that. So it has a very unique style in the way the characters move and look. The world stuff is all in like 2D, 2.5D kind of looking stuff, but the character itself has a very unique look to it. Has that kind of embroidery where you have like the little lines across it as the actual like material they use for that. Mm-hmm. Doesn't create like a solid color in the way it's done. So yeah, that's one of those like adventure platformer kind of games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it is. Trailer didn't give you too much to know about it, so that's happening at some point. I think it's Xbox Series X and S, Switch, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
Axiom Verge 2 is out now on Xbox, so you can check that out.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great game. Let's see. There is Birth. This is a weird little adventure game kind of thing that's been out on PC since, I think, February earlier this year. That's mm-hmm. coming to Xbox July 28th. I don't think it's coming out to any other platforms at that time. It's a little bit tough to kind of figure out like what that game was doing, because the website, I think, still just links to the Steam page for the game. And also mm-hmm. searching for Birth on Google does not give you the answers you want. Even Birth Game is not easy, but that's coming out soon on Xbox. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is coming to Game Pass at launch.
Yeah.
That's PlayStation, Xbox, PC on August 18th. So you'll be able to play that on Xbox Game Pass at launch. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, there's a couple of games. Dreamers. It's PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. That's like a neat little game. Challengers Games is like I think a Korean multiplayer game, very anime, kind of action shooter kind of thing. Mm. So you kind of got that as like a thing coming out at some point, but that's coming to everything, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, Switch, PC, and mobile, just in case you're wondering. Yeah. Dreamers, what was that? That was the new adventure game coming to Xbox Series X and S and One. Xbox One.
Mm-hmm.
That one's coming out September 1st. Okay, I didn't... The trailer said 2023, so... Mm-hmm. Okay. That's the thing. Yeah, they showed off a number of things. I just wrote down the stuff that was most interesting. Stumble Guys is coming to Xbox, which, if you don't know that, this is a ripoff of Fall Guys.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty blatant one.
Extremely blatant one.
Yeah. But became much bigger somehow because it was on mobile
mm-hmm.
before Fall Guys came to mobile.
Yeah.
Got huge through there and then went to Steam and then became huge there. And then now it's come to Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
Has a bit more variety of stuff to it that you can do, because they had some like vehicle sections that look like kart racing kind of stuff. But along with a lot of the same assortment of, you know, platforming challenges that Fall Guys has.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems like this is a timed exclusive for Xbox.
Mm.
As they want a Fall Guys level game on their platform to take off, so that's cool. Mm. And that's largely the Xbox showcase, not really a ton there.
Mm.
The Limited Run Games showcase was kind of the wild one, because mm. They went to some wild places for some cool games. One of the big ones, The Making of Karateka,
mm-hmm.
is a big game for the digital crap. I'm blanking on their name.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, where is it at here? Oh, I got the wrong thing linked. That's good. Yeah, let me pull it up real quick. Yeah, The Making of Karateka is the new game from Digital Clips. Yeah, that's right. They're doing the Atari 50 thing with a documentary and a bunch of ways to play the games kind of stuff, but doing it around one game, Karateka, which is kind of your kind of one of the early pioneers of games.
Yeah.
In terms of the PC stuff, I think in the early 80s, this came out before Prince of Persia. This influenced that.
Well, yeah, because it's by the same guy.
Yeah. But it did a lot of that stuff first. Mm-hmm. These sort of rotoscoped animations of, they just took a video of a dude running in a forest. Mm-hmm. Like, we'll just animate our character like that.
Yep.
Just traced over it, essentially.
Mm.
It's a very simple kind of game where your character is just generally running from left to right, mm-hmm. Occasionally running into a dude and fighting And then if you beat them, you get to keep running.
Mm-hmm.
As you're trying to save your girlfriend or whatever it is. They did a remake of this on the PS3 and Xbox 360.
Mm-hmm.
That looked really nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a very influential game from Jordan Mechner.
Mm-hmm.
From 1984. And so they're doing a lot of documentary stuff, talking to Jordan Mechner, mm-hmm. as well as a lot of people in the media and other developers and such, and showing a lot of stuff from that. It also has like different versions of the game to it. I'm not sure if they have a list of that just yet, but it's like a lot of the, if you don't know your PC games from that era, or yeah, your PC gaming, there are multiple platforms that had different capabilities. So a lot of games, even if it was released for these different platforms, like would look and maybe play differently and that kind of stuff. So they're covering at least like 3 or 4 of those versions. And then they're also doing a fully remastered version for, you know, 2023 to look nice and run nice for today.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. So they'll have that. I think that version has commentary on it as well. So they'll have some extra stuff there. So yeah, you get a lot of dev materials and all that. And I think it's supposed to be out in the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really cool kind of next evolution of some of the stuff Digital Eclipse has been doing pretty recently.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of doing what they're calling the Gold Master Series.
Mm-hmm.
Of sort of doing that documentary style game, but centered around one game, one title.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool. Let's see, there's Shantae Advance, Risky Revolution. So the history of Shantae goes back to the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. They made a Game Boy game called Shantae.
Yeah.
That was pretty well received, but being a small team way forward back then, they did not get very many copies printed with Capcom.
Mm-hmm.
But they started working on a Game Boy Advance game called Shantae Advance. And they worked on it for a bit and then canceled it as they just worked on other stuff. That seemed more feasible, but now they seem to be going back and finishing that game and then releasing it as a Game Boy Advance cart,
mm-hmm.
which is weird as hell to do, but very much a thing that limited run games would try to do. So they're essentially making a new Game Boy Advance game, finishing this project up,
mm-hmm.
And getting it out there. So that's cool. That'll be out early 2024. Mm-hmm. They did not seem to suggest that they will put it on any modern platforms.
Yeah,
but that'll probably happen at some point later. But yeah, there you go. Next up, we had Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore. This is not an old game, mm-hmm. but it's a indie game that is heavily influenced by an old game, mm-hmm. and not an old game you would expect. It is heavily influenced by the Philips CDI Zelda games,
mm-hmm.
Including that kind of art style for cutscenes in a way that. Here is at least not like looks like really you know pure shit. You know, adapting that kind of art style from to a platform that can't really handle the frames you need for that.
Mm-hmm.
They even have some of the voice actors from that game returning to do voices for some of the characters here.
Yeah,
but the action itself has a lot of the similar kind of like matte painting stuff, but. You know, it's actually designed so you can tell the difference between what's background and what's foreground.
Mm-hmm.
So they're obviously doing the thing where they're making it like this old game, but making it, you know, good.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how well that plays out, but that's neat. It's not a thing I ever expected an indie developer to make. So that's cool.
Mm.
Let's see. Yep. Plumbers Don't Wear Ties Definitive Editions coming to all the platforms in September.
Ah.
This is one of those infamously bad FMV games.
Mm-hmm.
Even worse than the ones you're probably thinking of.
Yeah.
This is one that's just one of those games that only like complete idiots and people that want to share it with other idiots on YouTube do. So there you go. That'll have extra stuff in it, so good luck with that. This Way Madness Lies is coming to PS5 and Switch. They're doing physical versions for it as well. That'll be July 25th on the Switch, so that's this week, or no, next week coming up. PS5 later this year. Then we got another game called Another Crusade that is influenced by an old game that I've not seen many developers try to do in their own way. And this is a Super Mario RPG style game called Another Crusade for PS5, PS4, you know, the Xboxes, Switch, and PC sometime this fall. So that's cool. It has that kind of same isometric kind of art style with characters that are all kind of stumpy looking, that kind of stuff. But I think it's supposed to have that kind of rhythmic kind of attack stuff to it for the battles. So yeah, that's neat. That's happening. Yeah, there's a remaster coming of the Disney Gargoyles game sometime this fall. I think it's also way forward doing that. They're all over this showcase for some reason. They're doing a lot of work on this, on these games here. So yeah, that's PlayStation, Xbox, Switch this fall. Then we got another game here that is influenced by old games, Double Shake. This is influenced by your Klonoa or Tomba style 2.5D platformers. So that's cool. Yeah, PlayStation, Switch, and PC sometime next year. Looks really cool. So that's one to keep an eye on. And then we got the weird stuff where all the these weird-ass classic games are getting re-releases or collections and whatnot. The first one was Clock Tower is getting a new release. This is the original Super Nintendo game. But I don't think it ever got a Western release, really, outside of probably fan translations. But yeah, if you don't know your Clock Towers, it is kind of a survival horror game before Resident Evil like defined all that stuff. It's very much a 2D game in the Super Nintendo style. But the big baddie is a weird little dude that carries around a big pair of scissors. And your character is just sort of walking around, you know, you're talking to people, trying to figure out what's going on. And if you run into that character, you just, they're just kind of, they don't run. They just kind of keep menacingly like walking at you. And they will chase you around and you're trying to go find places to hide and get out of their way and lose them, lose their trail. And it's a lot of that kind of stuff. So there's some good tension, especially when you're in a room and you find out, oh, this dude's coming. I got to go, you know, hide under the bed or find a place to, you know, hide in a way that they won't find you. Otherwise, they'll stick those scissors into you and kill you kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's getting a new version on what they called the, I forget what they call the engine for this, the Carbon engine, I think. There's this engine that WayForward apparently has that is great at, you know, allowing these games to get ported and remastered to the new platforms kind of thing. And they're doing it for a lot of these games here. Yeah, Clock Tower Port Plus. I don't know. They might just be calling it Clock Tower. I don't know. They kept calling it Port Plus in the video for some reason. But that'll be out early 2024 on everything. So that'll be cool for horror game fans to see like one of the originators of a lot of this stuff. So there you go for that. And I think this one technically got announced like a few weeks ago, but nobody really noticed it. The Jurassic Park Classic Games Collection coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. They're handling the physical editions for this. Yeah, the way that the Jurassic Park games happened is very weird, which is, you know, plays out in the way this is announced, where they have Jurassic Park and Jurassic Park Part 2, The Chaos Continues. Because a lot of these games on, I think it's just includes the NES, Game Boy, and Super Nintendo games. There are a lot of games named Jurassic Park.
Oh, yes, there are.
They're not all the same. A lot of them are different. I think the Super Nintendo one's like a side-scrolling game, but the NES and Game Boy ones are top-down. Kind of thing. So yeah, that's why it's like it only has two games, but technically it's like five because it's different ones on different platforms played differently, kind of stuff. So yeah, there are different physical editions you can get that come with different perks, you know, like CD soundtracks and such, if you want to go for that kind of stuff. So they have retro editions that include Super Nintendo or NES versions of those games included, I think. Some sort of physical copy of those games. So you can check out Limited Run Games for those options. But those pre-orders go up on September 1st, I think. But the game itself does not have any release date just yet. Then they got wild and said, hey, we're bringing Tomba to PS5, PS4, Switch, and PC.
Wow, there's a name I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, made by Whoopi Camp back in the day, which was an independent studio run by Tokuro Fujiwara, who was the maker of the Ghosts and Goblins games and a lot of Capcom stuff at that time. He made a game that's like, hey, what if we did that? But it wasn't like trying to kick you in the nuts over and over again constantly. Because it has a lot of similar style to it from that in gameplay stuff. But, you know, it's not trying to kill you constantly, though it'll let you die constantly if you want. But you have to play pretty poorly for that. But, yeah, this was published by Sony in North America and Europe back in the day, but in Japan it was self-published by Whoopi Camp. So that's why it's able to come to Switch and PC here. So that's cool. But yeah, I'm also surprised they didn't just get Tomba 2 if they were able to strike this deal and just make it a package deal for this, because Tomba 2 is not... that's more 3D in style, though it's not a 3D platformer. It's still confined to like linear pathing, but you do get points to switch paths, that kind of stuff. So that's neat. And yeah, that no date on that, just it's coming, which is wild.
Yeah, I mean, when this was announced, I had no idea, and all of a sudden I found out that I was because, you know, a while ago I said that Crash Bandicoot, but Tomba was like my thing back in the PSX days. So, you know, that's definitely something from my childhood that I forward to getting my hands on again. I'm pretty fun as I remember, but you know, hopefully now I can just go ahead and finish one. But yeah, it sucks Tomba 2 was announced.
So yeah, there you go. And then they ended on the weirdest ending point for any showcase I've ever seen, because then they announced that they are putting out the Gex trilogy for PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. Which Gex is a series that came out on the PS1 in the wake of Crash Bandicoot and Spyro the Dragon, of them being like, hey, we can do that too. And I think this was Crystal Dynamics doing this. So them in the wake of them doing the, you know, Tomb Raider kind of stuff, they're like, oh, we can do that too. And then none of those games are all that good. They just have a weird cult following, partially because of memes. And I think there's some people that still like it, which is fine, whatever. But they did not rate very highly compared to the other kings of the genre on the PS1. And they're also completely full of random references to like Austin Powers and other stuff that happened in that time frame.
So during this point in time, you know, Chris is right in a sense. Yeah, there was definitely every developer was trying to have their own Spyro the Dragon, their own Crash. And like, yeah, it got to a point where that pretty much was the case. Yeah, we had X, we had Chameleon Twist, we had, you know, Blinks later on, Klonoa and all that. Some were good, some were bad. Gex was beyond bad. But the thing was, Gex was, he sort of epitomized the late 90s, early 2000s. Because, you know, it was around this time where the Geico Gecko, you know, got popular. And Gex sort of, like, gave geckos an attitude. And, like, there was a time where I think the brand was actually Gecko. Like, there were people on the breast. Like, geckos were cool. And, you know, having this game exist, parodying just about everything that exists. I remember, like, flipping through Nintendo Power and EGM, seeing the Gex ads and, like, how, quote-unquote, adult they were. Like, again, like, geckos were cool. Again, the games, not so much. Maybe they were funny. There were definitely some sarcastic tones in there that a 9-year-old like me wouldn't understand. But at the end of the day, like, yeah, it has its fans because of the memeism, but it was just a part of the time. So, yeah, I'm wondering what they're going to do to these games, like, really remaster them to an extent. But, yeah, does this have to be done? No. Will limited run probably make money? It probably will.
Yeah, it'll be a game some people buy. Mm-hmm. And the very particular crowd will buy the limited run release, you know, physical releases for these.
Mm-hmm.
For that, but yeah, the series came out at a weird time because the first game was also released on the 3DO, the Sega Saturn, and the PC, and the second and third games launched on the 64 and
yeah.
the Game Boy Color.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, the 3DO is still viable and the Saturn's still viable, and then they put out the second game, like, no, they're not. We're done with that. It's Nintendo 64 time.
Yeah.
And the Game Boy Color, which I'm sure that might actually be better because it's not
mm-hmm.
as 3D dependent as Gex was.
Mm-hmm.
And I played a little bit of Gex. I emulated that because I was like, what the fuck was this game? Because I only ever played it on like a demo disc.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting 3D platformer. One, because it controls really weird and has some permanently inverted camera options. But you can pause the game and choose between a camera that you can fully control that can stay tightly behind you. That makes for a weird thing. And then one that kind of centers when you stop moving for a bit,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. So like, it was weird to see a 3D platformer that had that sort of level of options back then. That was the second Gex game. But yeah, it also just had Dana Gould just making random references for whatever reason.
Yep.
Because that was their thing that set them apart from everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Which means it probably does not age well at all.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you grew up in that era and specifically know those references for like Austin Powers and whatnot.
Mm.
But yeah. Yeah, Gex probably had a better time on the PlayStation than Sonic had on the Saturn.
Yeah.
Which is not a high bar, again. Gex was a low-tier kind of series. Along with, like, Croc and Bubsy 3D was probably the worst of those. But that's also not a high bar to say it's better than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's going to do it. That's the show for this week. We're going to end on Gex, as Limited Run Games did.
Yep.
Some cool stuff there that got announced, some weird stuff. That's the degenerates in the gaming audience would get excited about, but hey, that happens. So yeah, that's going to do it. Thank you to Brandon Denner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. I think we should be done with showcases. I don't think anybody else is going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, but yeah, that's going to do it. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers that might actually be excited for Gex or Tomba. That very specific niche of platformers. So, yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.